I already introduced Rabbi Weitzman, and the introduction, I'm not going to take the time to do it again, but suffice it to say that he's a real expert and authority in these areas and answers questions with great sensitivity. I can tell you I've worked very closely with him, and he's been extremely helpful in so many different ways, so it's really a privilege to have him. So it's my privilege to introduce Rabbi Weitzman.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So thank you, Rabbi Goldberg, and the Rabbi Moskowitz, and the Sisterhood for the arranging the program. And it's always full, it's always fun to speak to a full room. So it's really, the attendance is really quite astounding and heartwarming, because it means that we're talking about subjects that are important for people. One of the subjects that we were asked to speak about, and all the subjects that we're going to speak about today, were things that, in coordination with the Sisterhood and with the community, were things that that we wanted to speak about, that the community wanted to hear about. And we're going to speak in this session a little bit about contraception, which is an important and often complex issue, not only because there are a myriad number of halachic considerations with using contraception, which we're going to run through a little bit at the beginning, and also because there's a tremendous number of different types of contraception, but because of also this has an impact, especially in the areas of Tarat HaMishpacha, in the areas of preserving the laws of Ilchot Nida, which are often very much impacted by certain types of contraception. And the way we're going to set it up is I'm going to speak and Rabbi Goldberg is going to give the halacha. Now that put him a little bit on the spot. No, but he's going to say a little bit about, I think it's very important because Rabbi Goldberg is the rabbi here. He's the one that's answering the questions. So I'm going to give a little bit of the theory and a little bit of the questions. But if there are practical questions, then we're going to handle them together, right? And to come up with some consensus. And that if you have questions, that please raise them here or email or write them on the cards. And when there are practical questions, it's very important to have your local resource. So we can do great things from where we are in Israel and on our. And our office here in New York, but it's important to have a local. I think the local rabbis are the ones at this site. So let's talk a little bit about contraception. What's the idea? So why should we not use it? Well, why should we not get pregnant? Is really the question. Well, every pregnancy can you see that? It's very little small there, right?
Yeah.
Every pregnancy should come with joy. We should also rest between pregnancies. The idea of not getting pregnant isn't that we say family plan doesn't mean we're going to plan to have a small family. You can plan to have a large family, but we're going to plan it. So it's important sometimes to rest between pregnancies. Let's say, well, let's not use contraception. Let's just not have relations. There are rabbanim who say to a woman, we'll just go to the mikveh late and then you won't get pregnant. Abstinence is not an option. That's important, and you're going to hear later on in the day about the importance of sexuality throughout life. That's not an option. And we're still being fruitful and multiplying. Here's a fruitful and multiplying family. You may know them. I think that Rabbi Goldberg went to meet them last week, is what I hear, and they're being fruitful and multiplying, right? So the idea of not having children today doesn't mean I'm not going to have children in 6 months' time. That's very important, and it's very important conceptually. And we're not ready yet to extend our family. We're going to speak about extending families. Maybe Rabbi Goldberg, if there's time left, will speak about even not... Oops, something. They did something bad. Not having families. No? Did they do something?
Something up there.
Something up there. But... No? That's okay. No? We're good. However, so that's the reason why we would not want to yet get pregnant. However, there's a lot of problems with using contraception, and many of them are the no.
I'll work on it.
Okay, good. I'm going to continue. So we can the contravening the mitzvot of having children. So there are several mitzvot around having children. The other thing is that many of the methods of contraception that are used or that are being suggested are halachically contraindicated. Not only because there's a mitzvah to have children, but also, for example, the prohibition against wasting seed, against hotzad zelavatela, would be a contraindication for using a condom, for example, and maybe other types of methods as well. So that's the reason for using and the reason for not using. Yeah, we're good. Okay, good. Maybe we'll come back. We'll see. The wonderful thing about technology is we're able to stop having children. We just can't get the pictures up on the floor. So, thank God for those that made the pill, but not for the guys who made the projectors. Anyway, so... what are the mitzvot of having children? There are basically three mitzvot of having children, or around the idea of having children. there's the mitzvah of puruvu. Puruvu is the mitzvah of having children, of multiplying. And there's a machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, exactly how many children we should have, where Beit Shammai says we have two children, and Beit Hillel says we have two of each gender. Oh, sorry, we should have one of each gender. That makes sense because we want to multiply, we want to continue the people. We need, that looks like something's coming on there. It looks like it's coming. It looks like there's a light that wasn't there before. So that's is that the light at the beginning of the tunnel? So, here we are. Ah, slowly coming in. It's coming into focus. All right. We're going to go to the next slide. Yeah, we're good. Okay. All right. Why? Okay, so the other thing is very preferable to have children early. And I think that one of the greatest challenges we have in this country is people having children later, which has a whole ramification to do with fertility and other problems. There's a tremendous number of poskim that have been that have spoken about this. And one of the problems is promiscuity. The problem is, conceptually, that when the pill came out and became popular in the 70s, there was an idea that, oh, great, now we can have intercourse without having any responsibility, which we call promiscuity, but that we're not responsible and we're not going to get pregnant. And that, I think, in the eyes of the poskim, if you look at the poskim who wrote it in the 70s and 80s, that was very important for them. And the question is, can we interfere with God's plan? Maybe God should give me as many children as I want and everything will be wonderful. I love meeting women who say that. You know, I'm going to have whatever God gives me is great. The problem is that often I find after a later time in their lives that they sometimes say, maybe you can have too much of a good thing. So, got to be careful. Every time we need to have an expert posek. Contraception is not, my friend got a psak, therefore I can use that same psak. Because things change. And things change in both ways. So maybe that she was told she can't and I can. And it may be last pregnancy I could and now I can't. It could be last pregnancy I was using X method and now I should be using Y method. So it's very important to have an interaction with the posek. Rav Moshe Feinstein famously would not give a psak for contraception on the telephone, even though most of the tshuvot, we have the recorded response of Rav Moshe, but most of it was written, most of it was actually oral. He wouldn't speak about it on the telephone. He'd have to meet the people. When he met them, he would only give the heter, he would only allow it for 6 months. Why 6 months? Because we can allow, halachically, for beyond. The idea is I want to have an interaction with that couple. I want them to come back every 6 months and we can readdress the issue. It should be that there's an addressing there. That's an important element. Okay, so that's we're gonna dip over that. The basics. What is the basics? The basics, very simple. Here we have, this is a pregnancy which has been achieved by the meeting of egg and sperm in the fallopian tube, which then descends and implants in the uterus. And so everybody, we hope that everybody knows that. So there are many methods. What are the methods that we can do to present that? So, and here we end up with a baby. Well, the methods, therefore, are related to that. We could have a physical barrier to the sperm, so we won't have meeting of egg and sperm. We could have a hormonal suppression ovulation so that we don't get a releasing of the egg, even though we don't prevent, we have no physical barrier. We could castrate the husband or wife, and therefore we won't get ovulation and we won't get sperm production. We could have, we could reduce the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, therefore we won't get implantation. We could have withdrawal coitus interruptus, and if we won't get ejaculation inside of the, which will enter up into the uterus, we could destroy the sperm. We could have a spermicide. We could abstain. So all of these to look at different points of the point of ovulation of reproduction. So if we had a lot of time, so we could think about how each of these methods attacks a different part of the continuum between not pregnancy and pregnancy. And that's important when we think about it, because each of these have different halachic ramifications. So the chemical destruction of sperm is one problem. Coitus interruptus is a completely different problem. So when we say contraception as a whole, we have to know what we're talking about. And of course, we could have vaginal washing post-coital, which isn't really done today, but which is similar to sort of the chemical destruction of sperm. The halachic principles are, the Gemara speaks about three women who are allowed to use a moch. What is a moch? So one of the Balei HaTosfot says, the idea is the following. It's a post-coital vaginal washing, and therefore these women are permitted, but other women are forbidden. Who are the women that are permitted? A woman who's young, a woman who's pregnant, a woman who's nursing. Those three women are permitted, and everybody else cannot. Because the problem, says the Ri, in the Tosafot there on the Yevamot, is that we're wasting sperm, we're wasting seed, even after ejaculation, which is important because we would think that after ejaculation there isn't a prohibition of wasting seed. I heard that from quite a respected authority recently. That's not true. The Tosafot disagrees with that and says that even after ejaculation there's a prohibition of wasting seed. Rashi says these women have to use a moch. Other women are permitted to. So other women are allowed to use contraception. And Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosfot there says, these women are obliged to use even during intercourse, which sounds like a diaphragm or some sort of blockage between the passage of sperm. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but that's very important sugya, because we think about it, in the Gemara and Yevamot, they spoke about contraception, and they spoke about a physical barrier to conception, and discussed it, who can, who cannot use it. I think that's a pretty amazing thing to consider, that 2,000 years ago, our sages were speaking about specific methods of contraception, and discussion whether they can be used or not. What are the halachic prohibitions? Well, wasting seed we spoke about. Castration is a big problem. And we're not keeping the mitzvah of peruv ruv, of procreation. The prohibition of wasting seed is, according to many, a prohibition from the Torah, or a prohibition, the Rabbanan. The Shulchan Aruch writes that it's asur lotzi shechvatel levatela, vavon ze chamor mikol avrot shebetorah. This is the worst thing that a person can do, is to waste seed. And he actually says, therefore, a person cannot marry a woman who can't become pregnant. This is kind of an interesting thing, because usually we say wasting seed is non-vaginal sex. So that therefore it's not, if we have intercourse during a time when a woman cannot become pregnant, that is not counterindicated. The Shulchan Aruch, oh, again I did the same thing. Maybe I have to keep moving. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. It doesn't like me. That was too risque. I'll be better. So we
it's overheating or something.
Overheating. Wow. A little hot in here. That's another session. Yeah, I'm sorry. I can continue with that.
No, continue. Yeah.
Chaval, yeah. So we usually don't hold on that. We usually hide.
Hi.
Not going well. Not going well, Liz. It's not happy. It's not happy.
All right, I'll go back.
Let's
keep going.
It goes on and off?
It may or may not.
Yeah. I probably could have guessed that myself.
I can bring another projector on. Do you want me to do that?
Oh, it's chaval that keeps going on and off.
Yeah, it's
going
to go back on.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. So, okay, good. So,
it's amazing that Rabbi Goldberg is not only a wonderful rabbi and a tremendous community leader, but he also knows how to work the projector, which is more than the rabbi of my shul can be said about him. So we don't usually hold that. We hold that there is no prohibition about having regular intercourse, vaginal intercourse. That isn't considered wasting seed. We just published a paper in a quite respected journal of sex therapy, in which he spoke about sexuality among older people, among the elderly, in which we clearly stated, as I think it's clearly accepted, that there's no halachic prohibition about having intercourse that cannot produce pregnancy. And that's important because we're going to speak about that maybe a little later on when we speak about the actual methods. Okay, it's coming back. Okay, so that's the prohibition of wasting seed. The next thing, we can't see anything. Okay, it's not important. Okay, so we're gonna skip through this. It's not so. Okay, castration. There's a prohibition against castrating. The Rambam says that there's a prohibition of destroying the sexual organs. There's a huge machloket whether that prohibition includes exactly which organs. So the question is, if we did a vasectomy, would that be included or not? And there's another big machloket is whether women are included in that. That's very important. We get things like tubal ligation. Is tubal ligation considered to be serous or not? It's a big, big, big machloket. The Gra says it's a sword from the Torah. Others say it's a sword from the Rabbanan. What about temporary castration? What about taking a pill? I had a question the other day, very fascinating question. The guy who has a very, very huge libido and has very big sexual problems, can he take a shot that will basically depress his entire hormonal system in order that he'll have less sex drive. So that's a temporary castration. That's what they do to rapists in prisons. Is that considered also to be castration? It's not, we're not cutting anything, but we are basically making him infertile at that point. There are three obligations we have from the Torah. There's puruvu. There's lo l'tov bara l'shevet yetzerah. God created the world to be inhabited. And there is the obligation of baboker zerat zerecha ule'erev al tanach yadecha. Continue having children even later on. Puruvu, the mitzvah, is to have, as we said, two children. According to Beit Shammai, two children of any gender. They learn it from Moshe Rabbeinu, who only had boys. Or Beit Hillel says to have a boy and a girl in order to continue procreation. Can we push off that mitzvah? Are we obliged to have that mitzvah immediately? That's a question that we said maybe we'll speak about. What's Lashevet? Lashevet is the obligation to have more, to inhabit the world. If we just, when we think about it conceptually, that if every couple only had two children, even if they're born a girl, eventually we'd have a population decrease. That's what you have in places like in China. There's a population decrease because everybody only has, they used to have one and then have two, but there's still going to be a population decrease because not everybody gets married, not everybody's fertile, not everybody lives till marital age. And therefore, in order to get more than that, we have to have more children. So what's that? So that's to have more children, maybe it's one more child, or to have, the Taz says, another boy and a girl, or to have, the Mukiesi says, two boys, two girls, to have, continue having families. And we see that most people continue having families more than just having a minimal boy and a girl. Le'erev is to continue having children even when you get older. Here we have this very happy gentleman. They both look happy. So I'm innocent. The Gemara lends it out. Rabbi Akiva says we should have students when we get older. We shouldn't give up teaching. We shouldn't give up having children. What's the limit of that? You know, what's the limit of la'erev? Is that an ethical obligation? We're going to run through this slide quickly because it's just a lot of data, which isn't so important. Is it a halachic obligation? But we can understand conceptually that we don't say to a couple, okay, you've had your three, four children, that's enough for any more children. We want to continue having children later. And we said about family planning, I can plan to have a large family, but I don't want to have them all at one go. I want to have them all now. But we should try to have them younger. And this is an ideal family. I think since this picture, I have another two kids, I think, this family. But I always say, if I had a house that big, I would be happy to have that many kids. But my whole house can fit, I think, into one of these rooms here. So and I have not that many. But. All right. The other thing which is very important, and we're not teaching poskim, but I think when we teach poskim, and Rabbi Goldberg definitely will concur with this, that it's important to have the couple's medical mental state in mind. We can't say there's an obligation to have children, you have to go and have them, and the kids are going to be not well-bred, and not well-fed, and not well-dressed, and not taken care of, or there's going to be medical problems. So there's things that we have to take into account. We can't say the person is obliged against their will to continue having children. That's a little bit, that's a question about other considerations. And there should be regular intercourse, the problem of having a diaphragm, maybe we'll speak a little later. Continuing a situation, there's maybe grammar which is doing something indirectly. We're going to, this reversible as opposed to permanent. And the effectiveness of the contraception in cases of life and death, for example. Some people say that I have an obligation. It's not a choice. I don't have children. I have a genetic abnormality that if I get pregnant, I'm going to pass on to my children. And therefore, we're not going to have children only through a process of PGD, which we're going to speak about maybe in the next session. So that's a different case. And sometimes the obligation to not have children at the moment is to give us a little bit of a breather. And sometimes actually there's a real life-threatening condition. So these are considerations, and we're not going to go spend a lot of time on them, but those are important. So we can look at the methods. What are the methods of contraception? So this is, I think, where Rabbi Goldberg is going to step in and say maybe that here it's different. I'm going to tell you the preferences that we think in Israel. And the truth is that in Israel and America, there's slightly different reasons, and there's slightly different preferences, and we'll maybe speak in a moment why that's the case. And we're going to speak about the methods which we think are preferable, and what is the halachic implication of those, specifically in the questions of Tarat HaMishpacha. Okay, that's where we're going to go now. The first preference is hormonal. Hormonal is better because it's grammar, it's an indirect, it causes, overcomes ovulation, and therefore is a prevents pregnancy, but it doesn't do anything physical, it's not like a physical barrier. It's also temporary, like this projector is temporary. So... okay, it's good, we're good. It's temporary. So you take it and you can stop taking it.
And the way that regularly hormonal pills are taken is that a woman takes them for 21 days and then gets a period, and then stops taking, gets a period, and then continues. It's a monthly thing. It doesn't have to be taken every month. There was a study done in Israel, which you can take, the same pill can be taken for 3 months in a row. You can take two packets or three packets at the same time. That's important, because for a lot of women, they want to control exactly when they're getting a period. For example, women who their husbands are not always around, or that they're going on a trip, they want to control not only getting pregnant, but they want to control getting a period. So that often the hormonal methods are very, very effective for that, which you can't use, for example, with an IUD. We'll speak about Mirena in a moment. That's really a method that for many women is very preferable. For example, we have, I don't know what the situation here, we have women who their husbands are in the army, and they come back every 2 weeks. So for that woman, the best is to take the hormonal method, because she can then time when she's going to get a period. She wants to not get a period. She wants to have gone to the mikveh sometime before that Shabbat that he comes back. And so every 2 weeks she's going to have that leeway, and she's going to get a period in between. So that's a very, very effective and a very good method for her. The problem with the hormonal methods, it's okay, we're good. It's good. The problem with the hormonal methods is that there are three major problems. First is you have to remember to take it every day. So that's not everybody, and if you look at the literature, they say, what's the breakthrough bleeding rate? It's, you know, whatever, 95%. There's 5% breakthrough bleeding. But I know, because I speak to women, that that's not the case. Because it's a very simple reason. The literature is dealing with the ideal woman. Now, I'm sure in this community there are many ideal women, right? And apart from my wife, is also an ideal woman, right? It's wonderful. But the real woman has real life things that come up. So she knows at 9 o'clock in the morning she has to take this pill. But at 9 o'clock in the morning, that morning, suddenly she gets a call from school, and the kid suddenly is being sick, and she has to go and pick him up. And then she forgets. And that's a lot of times where the problems start. The second problem, so you have to remember, so if you're not the sort of person that's going to remember to take a pill every morning, this is not, or every day, once a day, this is not a method for you. Once you start taking it not at the same time and messing around with it and missing out half a day, there's a question about its effectability. That's a big question, but there is definitely an impact on spotting, which is the second problem. This problem is they have breakthrough bleeding. Breakthrough bleeding occurs because we're trying to control two things. We're trying to control ovulation, and also the endometrial lining. Now, in regular, in nature, those two things are sort of correlated together. When we're trying to control them, it happens because of our attempt to override the body system that we have spotting. Now, that might not be major spotting. In fact, when you speak to the drug companies, the instance that we have of spotting is much higher than they have, because for a drug company, breakthrough bleeding means a woman who discontinues use because of bleeding. That's considered breakthrough bleeding. Whereas for us, breakthrough bleeding is tipa dam ke chaldal. It's a small amount of blood. So for spotting, if you look at a new drug that comes on the market and says, yeah, there's, you know, 98% effective and 2% breakthrough bleeding, that doesn't always mean that that's the case in our communities. The same thing. And the third thing is it's been related to certain types of illnesses like cancer. So that's true if you take a long, long course of oral contraceptives. So if a woman takes 5 years without a break in oral contraceptives, she's at a higher risk. If you take a small amount of time, you're at a lower risk. Therefore, if a woman is getting a heter from her rav to use contraceptives for the next 2 years or the next 5 years, then oral contraceptives may not be the best thing for her. That may be better to put in something else. So that's a little bit of the problems of the background. This can be given as a pill. There's a newer method, and so new, which is given as a patch, because we worked out that the same thing you can get orally, you can also get through your skin. So now the world in all sorts of medicine is moving to put it as a patch. We're going to start giving our kids, instead of trying to give them medicine for the hate and they start screaming and shouting, they're going to start giving it as a patch, because it's a much easier method of giving. Just as an aside, it can also be given vaginally.
So a pill that we can't take, some people can't swallow pills. You can take the same pill and put it in the vagina, you're going to get exactly the same effect. For all concepts, not for all pills, but it is for this. So that's also an important method. It's now given as the Nuvo ring. The ring does the same thing. The advantage of the ring and the patch is that what happens with our oral, we take it at 9 o'clock in the morning, we have a huge peak of hormones that are going in, and then it breaks down, has a little half-life and breaks down. Then we have the next morning a peak, and those peaks and troughs are often what causes breakthrough bleeding. The release of the hormone with the patch or with the Nuvo ring is much more uniform. And therefore, a lot of women who saw breakthrough bleeding with the oral will not see it with these other methods. So that's why they develop them. And this is placed vaginally. They're working on this is placed for a week and you change it, but they're working on one that can be changed for a month and even for a year. Depo-provera is the same thing, given as a shot. You take Depo-provera, you put in your body you have the same hormone for 3 months. In our experience, Depo-provera is not appropriate for religious women, because you have a tremendous amount of breakthrough bleeding, and it's inside your body. You can't stop it. So if it's not good with oral, you can move to something else. If you have a shot that's in your body, in your bloodstream, you can't stop it now. And I have women who've had it, and 6 months later, they're still bleeding. Even if they stop this discontinued use. So that's not always a good thing. And no plants, and these plants which are really almost being stopped being used, we find are really not appropriate for religious women. So we're talking about a hormonal method. That these things all work on the same principle. The only question is, how do we administer them? And these last three are what we would promote. These top two are not are really not good for religious women. A lot of breakthrough bleeding. Now there's also the mini pill. The mini pill is a progesterone-only pill, which is good for women who are nursing. Now, a lot of women who the regular oral concepts are not good for them are very happy to take the mini pill, but it's really only good for women who are nursing, because nursing in itself is it's a sort of contraception, and so these methods, and there's a hundred out there. Everybody says to me, what's the best oral contraceptives to take? And the answer is whatever your doctor says, because there's so many out there. There's so many different types, and there's higher doses and lower doses, which is also important, because now we're having lower doses. So a lot of the studies that were done on oral contraceptives and cancer are talking about higher dose pills. The mini pill has to be taken every single day. And we get a lot of breakthrough bleeding. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that he says that a woman is taking these mini pills and sees bleeding, that's called nida from the Torah, because we know that she's going to bleed, because every woman that takes them bleeds. Now, my experience is not exactly the case. It's true that all the women that come to ask me questions are women who bleed, but there's lots of women that don't ask me. So I'm guessing those women don't ask me, either they don't ask me, they ask someone else, or they don't ask me because everything's okay for them. Or they just don't ask anybody. We hope that it's somewhere in between the first and the second. So there's not everybody bleeds, but there is a lot of bleeding initially. It has to be taken at an exact time. A woman has to drink a lot, and it's also important sometimes to take a double dose. Because do you want to switch now? That was like you're waiting for the cue. Because the dosage on these mini pills is very small, it can be taken... I lost mine, but that's okay. It can be taken. So if we say it has to be every day, so it has to be 9 o'clock in the morning. So a woman can take 9 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock at night. What? Yeah, it's good. I got it. It's just not annoying. So
you have to
play around with it. It did look like it was. It looked like it was coming there. I can see it now. Before I couldn't see it, now I can see it. I'm happy.
Yeah.
There are women who take mini pill the whole time. For them, it's good for them. That's generally not. Yeah, that looks good. That's good. Now we can't see neither here nor here. I love technology.
Okay. Go on, I'll figure it out.
There's some women that, for them, the mini pill is. Oh, no, we just changed the orientation. I think change the orientation. Yeah, that's the thing. That was what we did. Yeah? Yeah?
Sorry.
I don't know. No? No, that's...
I don't know what did that.
I don't know. It's okay. That's what I'm worried about. Get it back. I think maybe that just changes the orientation. So it does.
have this on your period, does it?
I don't know. Do I remember it? No? Oh, there you go. You put on? Yeah? Nothing. No input. Maybe computer one? No?
HDMI. Yeah, HDMI.
Yeah, the problem with this computer doesn't have the HDMI. That's the problem. Huh? No? No? Right. Ah, something happened here. So I can disappear here, which maybe this one. Gornish. Alright, now I can't sit here either.
Sorry. Is it on?
Yeah, it's on.
The where you connect it on the back of the projector, maybe the computer 1, 2, whatever.
Yeah, is that one of them?
No, that's
let's forget it. I'm good, because we'll continue it here. Yeah?
Is it on there?
Oh, there you go. Wow, how did that get to that? Whoa. No, come forward. Too far back. Alright.
Sorry, everybody.
Thank you.
Alright, good. So, alright, we're good. This is the recap of everything we've done. It's going to be in the test, so you guys better be ready. Okay, so the mini pill, some women, it's good for them. And we spoke about double doses. Male pill. Just when my husband needs another excuse to gain weight and have mood swings. Not really so effective today. What we're going to spend a lot of time now is speaking about the IUD. IUD, the intrauterine device, is becoming a much more common method of contraception. It's very good for long-term contraception, meaning that a woman, what happens is that we put it into the body, and over the years we've developed different types of IUDs. This, I don't know if I would want this anywhere near anybody I know, but we've developed different types that basically we've honed down the shape and the method, and it's essentially placed inside the uterus. And what does it do is that it prevents the meeting of sperm and egg. That's really what it does. And if there's a meeting of sperm and egg, it prevents implantation. But its real major primary form of conception is that it disenables meeting between sperm and egg. That's really what it does. So the IUD, once we put it in initially, there's a lot of bleeding because the body, if you put in a foreign body into your body, the body tries to reject it. Mm-hmm. When it rejects it, it bleeds. So initially there's a lot of bleeding. What that should usually measure out after about 2 or 3 months. So if a woman's going to use contraception for 6 months, IUD is not a good method. Because by the time we've got back to having normal periods, it's already she's going to stop taking it. But if a woman's going to take for a year and beyond, IUD is usually a better method because of the limitations that we said with the oral contraceptives before. The IUD, there's several types. This is a regular, normal, basic IUD. This is an IUD called a Gynefix. A Gynefix is copper rings, and it's placed inside the uterus. And the third type is Mirena, which is a IUD that also at the same time gives off hormonal treatment as well. So it's a combination of IUD and hormones. We'll speak about all of them at the moment. Regular IUD, we said, now we know we've been using it for quite a number of years, the regular form that we have, Novity, and it's a very effective method. It's not 100% effective method, but it's very effective. The problem is initial bleeding, and some women get, because it irritates the sides of the endometrium, the sides of the uterus, and sometimes also the cervix, so some women get a lot of bleeding. The idea of the Gynefix is to get away from that, is that if it's set in the uterus, it's not moving and banging against the sides of the uterus. This is basically free, it can move around.
So it can change as a woman changes and grows through her life. It can change. It can change as a result of intercourse. It can shift, and therefore you see that it's bleeding. So this cuts that out. The problem with this is that it's set inside the uterus, and in certain countries they discontinue using Gynefig because they said it's just too dangerous to the uterus itself. In Israel, it's still being used. The Mirena combines things that we had before. It uses the IUD, but also has a hormonal change. And the advantage of the Mirena is for some women, they get very, very little bleeding. In fact, they stop having a period altogether after a few months, and the hormones have stopped the period. The IUD prevents pregnancy, and here we have a wonderful method of contraception. For those that like it, as you used to say, speak highly of it. The problem is that there's no indication when we put it in if you're going to be a good candidate or a bad candidate. Now, a bad candidate, I know women who used Mirena, they bled continuously for 6 months, got fed up with it, took it out, and bled for another 9 months after that as a result of the hormones. Now, I don't know. Now, I see all the bad. I see the worst cases. So when I presented this once with a doctor, he said, well, you're seeing all the bad cases. I'm seeing all the good cases. I put in thousands of Mirena, and I have an X percent, a small percent, that are coming to you. But most of the women are not. That's true. But it's a gamble, and it's an expensive gamble. Because the Mirena itself is not cheap, and we don't know how long. So I can tell you, the first 2 or 3 months, any woman putting Mirena is going to have a very disturbed cycle. However, I can't tell you if it's worth you waiting for it or not. After 6 months, most women give up just because they don't have a life. It's an excellent method of birth control. They always need that. Their husband's going crazy. They're never together. It's wonderful. And then you get into Shalom Bayit issues, which Bill Peters can speak about a little later. So that's our experience. Generally, we would say, Mirena, we do not like it. Who is it good for? It's good for sometimes for older women. For women in their mid-40s who are perimenopausal, who are seeing a lot of perimenopausal symptoms, such as irregular periods, for some of these women, Mirena is a good option. For some women who take Mirena and it's got a lot of bleeding, they can go back to taking progesterone as well. So you're putting in a lot of hormones into your body. I mean, personal experience is it's not a good thing to do, but so that's generally what we would see. IUD, I say to women, IUD, you go for the simplest IUD, it's the cheapest. It's the easiest to put in. You don't need to have any expertise. And generally, it's going to give you the right result. The advantage of the regular IUD is once you put it out, you've got nothing left in your body. It's in, you took it out, it's finished. Whereas Mirena, you'll have left the residue of the hormonal treatment. For women, it's good for them. It's excellent. They don't get a period. They can have like a very, very small, minimal bleeding, which according to many poskim isn't even considered to be a period, and it's excellent. So that's a merry-go-round. But do you want to say what's your experience with Mirena? What are you hearing? What are you seeing in this community? What?
Very similar.
Yeah, similar. So there's some women's wonderful, some women's terrible, right? I mean, that's so. Let's say it's for 60% of women, it's good, and do you guys want to divide yourselves up into the good? And so, I mean, that's as arbitrary as it can be. We have no way of knowing it. So I think it's a gamble. Many women love it. And women have come, but I can tell you that almost every time that I get a call, I have an IUD and I'm seeing large bleeding. Today, invariably, it's the next word is, and it's Mirena. I had a woman in my community put in Mirena, she's bleeding all the time. I said, why didn't you call me before? She said, I knew I should have called you before. And I didn't. And she's been bleeding for 6 months. Well, and so it's very, very problematic to predict it. Women, it's good for them, it's excellent. Now, the fact that it was good for you last pregnancy means nothing for this pregnancy, because last pregnancy you were 5 years younger, and then you're 5 years older, your body's changed as well. So it's very, we don't like it, although, again, for some women it's excellent. The third preference, at least in Israel, and it seems to me that here in America is somewhat different, is a diaphragm. The diaphragm is basically the moch that we spoke about in the Gemara. It's a physical barrier to sperm. It's also used together with the spermicide. So it's a combination of spermicide and a physical barrier. The reason that in Israel it's not really, the reason in America it's more accepted is because Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva that permitted it. The problem is, there's a debate whether Rav Moshe Feinstein was speaking about the diaphragm that's used today. It's possible that he was talking about a cervical cap, which is actually placed inside the cervix and cannot be felt during intercourse. Unlike the diaphragm, which can, you can see if a woman places it herself, so then this is how far it is in. So it can be felt during intercourse, which is somewhat problematic. The other problem with the diaphragm is that practically we're relying on the woman's expertise in putting it in. With the spermicide, so it's not considered to be 100% effective. Usually not used. Do you see different here? Do you think more effective here?
So I saw a woman, I remember discussing it in America, I said to, and I was at a very, very learned and respected young Talmid Chacham's house, and we're talking about contraception over Shabbat dinner. I guess, I don't know, when people invite me to Shabbat dinner, they feel that they have to speak about. I was on this Friday in a meal that one guy was there, he had to go and go out for a glass of water in the middle. So we're talking about it, and then I said, no, diaphragm, can use it, and his wife went very red, and they looked at each other sheepishly, so I thought maybe the conversation should end there, because obviously we're using it. And that was obviously with halachic guidance. Spermicide is basically breaking down the sperm. It's destroying sperm. It's placed inside before intercourse. It's not a particularly effective method, even with things like VCF, which is more localized. It's not a tremendously effective method. Spermicide is good for women who are doing other things as well. So a woman that's nursing, initially, spermicide can help. And that's good for like the woman who's just given birth. She wants to use. She's her first time going to the mikveh. If we tell her take the mini pills, she may see bleeding and then have push off the first mikveh. So often they will tell her that spermicide is a good place to start. And after a few weeks, after you've been to the mikveh, then you and you're nursing, everything's okay. Then you can start using the mini pills. So it's not generally something we would use for a long time, but for a couple of months at the beginnings, you're pretty good. Didn't work. Sorry, I guess that's what you're saying. What are problems? Well, condom. And even a phenidom, which is a condom used by women, are the same, because that's really a block sperm. There are certain circumstances in which we would permit the use of a condom. That's in cases where no other method could be used, and maybe in the cases of a communicable disease. So we have couples that one of them has AIDS. Bezod Hashem Hoplin in his community. Never have such a case. We have a couple in which one of the cases has AIDS. There are poskim who say that couple has to get divorced. Their arpaskin will permit the use of a condom. The difference is whether it's a communicable disease that's temporary, so that they have something that's being treated, or something that AIDS that we really can't treat. We can keep you alive now for a long time, but we can't really treat it. And so that's going to be what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. Condom is problematic. Problem is not considered to have been a very effective method as well. Condoms break. Condoms are dependent on putting in at the right time. They're not generally considered to be a good method, and they are halachically problematic. Mifigin and RU486 are the morning after pill. That is not considered the method of contraception. Who is that good for? Those are good for cases of rape cases or mistake cases in which we would use that. But that's generally not considered to be a good method of contraception. And that does, at least some of them, cause a miscarriage. Possibly NOR2 is taken later. Coitus interruptus is not an option. I heard anybody using it recently anyway. Permanent solutions are vasectomy, it's a question of serous, of the castration we spoke before, and tubal ligation. Tubal ligation is irreversible. There were a poskim that wrote in the past that it's reversible and therefore maybe it's permitted. It's irreversible and therefore it's problematic. The other thing I would say to women, I had a call last week, a woman who's, I'm going to give birth tomorrow, I'm going to go and have my cesarean tomorrow, and the doctor says, if I'm already there, you know, already cutting open, so let's do tubal ligation as well. My answer to her was, you know what, maybe there could be a place to mature because she has a life-threatening disease. This is not a decision that you make because, oh yeah, tomorrow I'm going in. And the doctor happened to mention it on the way to the operating room. Because this is going to change your life. And now things change in people's lives. And things change that are better. So your medical condition may get better. Lo aleinu, things change for the worse. We had cases of people who lost children, who wanted to, part of their therapy was to have other children. And that now they have tubal ligation. That the option only is to have an in vitro fertilization. A person should be very careful about using an permanent method, whatever it may be. We have men who did vasectomies and then the Chozer B'Tshuvah, or then converted to Judaism, or had cases like that. And now what do you do? It's a problem to reverse these things. It's not so simple that it can be done. The other thing that's used now is something called an eshur. Eshur is a coil, a titanium coil. It's extremely expensive, because titanium is a very expensive metal, that's placed inside the fallopian tube, and the tissue, scar tissue, grows up around it. So it's if a woman needs to do tubal ligation because we have no other method and she has pikuach nefesh, so then we would prefer this because it's a grammar. It happens not, we're not cutting anything, but over time it becomes sealed. But this is not effective immediately. So a woman that uses a shura cannot have
unprotected intercourse immediately and not get pregnant. It doesn't happen immediately. It does happen over a certain amount of time. And Escher today is becoming more commonly used. It's an expensive method, but it's also irreversible. So the only advantage of it is that it happens by itself. You're not cutting anything. And you don't need to go and have an operation. It's placed inside. It can be done hysteroscopically. It's placed inside, but it's really irreversible. You can't cut it right out. The fallopian tube is a very, very delicate organ. Once you've ruined it, it's gone. Okay? I know families like that. That's it. I don't know if we have any time left, but people want to ask questions. I know you've got emails. Yeah, got emails. You got any emails? People are happy. Yeah. Okay. Sure, of course.
Me?
Yeah.
Is there a point where the amount of spotting becomes halakhically problematic with an otherwise permissible form of birth control? Where it's no longer there to use it?
I heard two parts of your question. Is there a problem in which the spotting becomes nida?
No, at which it becomes usur to use that method of birth control.
So I don't think we can say that there's no issur for a woman to become nida. That's a normal, natural case. A woman becomes nida. I would advise against it because it's a question of shalom bayit. You're going to get them to, they're basically using abstinence because you're just not having, which is 100% effective method, right? But that's not what you want to do. That's not what your idea. So there are cases I would advise against it, but I don't think you can say it's halakhically prohibited.
Can you speak about the question that I get most often?
Yeah, please.
Is when there is spotting, when they become a nida.
Okay, so that's right.
If you could speak about it in terms of toilet paper, underwear, spotting. Right.
One leg. The answer to when does, but that's what I thought you were originally asking, when does spotting become nida, which is really a question. There's a difference in halakha between nida, which we say, the Gemara says, comes with hargasha, a woman knows she's getting a period, and between regular spotting, and therefore spotting is much more easy to say, it doesn't make a woman nida. However, at one point, if that's the case, many women, probably in this room as well, don't have a hargasha, don't have a feeling, even when they get a period. So, but they know it's a period. A woman says, I know it's my period, but I can't tell you I have a specific argasha that I know. When there's a flow of blood, that's my period. So the poskim today, pretty much Rav Avadia, Rav Moshe, and other poskim who are alive, say that really we get to a point in which there's a threshold that beyond that, it's already not spotting. What is that? Well, the entire period is about 30 cc's of blood, which sounds a lot or little, depends on what side of the table you are. But it's actually not a tremendous amount of a period. That's a very small cup. That's really what it is. It looks a lot, but it's really not a lot. So if we get to a third of that, then we would say that's already an amount that I can't say that's just spotting. So spotting that's seen on toilet paper, according to most poskim, that's seen on a panty liner, that's seen on coloured underwear, is not a problem. So a woman says, "Oh, every time I see something on coloured underwear, is that okay?" See, well, it's not that simple, because there comes a point in which it's more than just spotting. It's already a third of a period. So I give you an example. I had a case. A guy called me. His wife using an oral contraceptive, and she's starting seeing spotting. Okay, it's on toilet paper. So we say generally our advice is to wait 24 hours and see what happens. If in 24 hours it develops to be a full-grown period, it's problematic. And if it doesn't, then don't have intercourse, but you can touch. 1 second. So she said, so you can have intercourse, but you can touch during that time. Because like pre-shasimuch levesa, we think you might get a period, but we don't know. So he says it's a toilet paper, it's colored toilet paper, it's fine. Next day, same thing. So this goes on for a few days. He comes to me in Motzei Shabbat one day. I'll never forget this scene. I'm sitting on the couch next to him, and he brings out a bag like this, full of toilet paper, and he pulls it out, and he lines them up like this. It comes to like a high, like this high, and it's every single one has got blood in it. So I said, "That's a period. I mean, that's a period in a bag. It's like six of things. That's a period. I mean, well, at what point?" So, and I think that a lot of the debate is at what point do we... You're going to laughing. Okay. So at what point does it become that? And I think that that's a lot of the poskim. What's essential in that point is to be in touch with the poskim. Because it's very possible that a woman's going to be more machmir than she should be. And it's possible that a couple are going to feel sort of guilty that we're still touching, even though I'm still bleeding. Not every bleeding makes a woman nida, but it's also true that not every bleeding that we see on colored underwear or on panty liner or on toilet paper does not make a woman nida. So there's an in between that. I don't think it's
what I tell people,
yes, Bakusha.
Based on your advice and others, is that If there is spotting, make sure to wear color underwear, preferably a darker color
right.
underwear. And you know, the age old, try to avoid looking at toilet paper, which is an uphill battle. And if there is spotting, so Rabbi Willigan others say, if the spotting is heavy enough that one is putting on a pad or a tampon, that's when it becomes a period, not spotting. If it's light enough that a person is confident to go on even without wearing a pad, then that's called spotting. And if it happens to colored underwear on toilet paper, it will not create an edema. But if it's heavy enough that a woman feels she
needs to... And the only caveat I have of that is that each woman is different. So some women are very, very particular, and they'll put a panty line on at the beginning. So you have to. It has to be. You know, a woman says, "Yeah, I saw it. I changed panty line 3 times, but on each one I saw a very, very small amount." So it has to be an amount. Not only, you know, it has to be somewhat general. Not only for this specific woman who's very particular about hygiene, which is great, but it has to be a woman that's an, you know, a certain amount. So that's I think a temperate. So that's a good yeah.
Last question, right there.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. So
when the man came to with a bag of toilet paper, at what point is his wife counting day one?
So that's an excellent question. So a day one for regards to 5 days and 7 days, or regards to vested for next month?
No, as regards to like...
So I say the point at which they separate from intercourse because of halachic consideration, not because they just didn't feel like it that night, but they think that Torah says you can't have intercourse, at that point there she can count that day. Right? I would prefer, even if they separate from everything. But I think that in that case that they didn't know, so she could basically start counting, since it had been a week, she could start counting that night. She could do the Shivanikim the next day, basically. Yeah, there was a question there. I go with the last question, but...
Two more questions, but you're giving me a break between the next
yeah, yeah.
So are you saying you can't count retroactively? You can't say, for example, this day I'm not sure, so I'm going to wait...
Yeah, if a couple... No, it's the opposite. If a couple separated for halakhic reasons, from intercourse, then according to most Muslims, they can count that day right there.
Even if you're having regular conflict.
Correct. According to most Muslims, but some of those not medicine. What about some?
I just want to say for practitioners, you're a practitioner.
Sure.
With an IUD.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of women come to me with bleeding or spotting after they put an IUD. And I just see that a lot of doctors don't give aftercare for the IUD. And it's very helpful to give, it's recommended to give high doses of ibuprofen.
Right, right.
Which is like 800 milligrams 3 times a day for 5 days. The inflammatory effect
right.
will help calm it down. And sometimes if that doesn't work, taking birth control for 2 or 3 months with the IUD to calm down the whole cycle will
can
sometimes
work.
Help.
Sometimes.
So instead of taking out the IUD, sometimes it's worth it to play around a little bit.
Correct. So, I agree. Thank you. Yeah, last comment.
Yeah. I want to ask, you mentioned from the beginning you can't waste the seed. But all these methods are
going to
do that.
No, as I said, wasting seed is only not having vaginal intercourse.